This week on RSBNB Update, the Oddman Shop gets a refresh and it paints the future of Treasure Hunter. Maud Warden reveals himself and he has an impressive resume, including work on a little game called Overwatch. Finally, Epic Jam convinces us of the need for the PVM Hub. This is RSBNB Update, episode 748, recorded Thursday, October 24th, 2019. The Warden and the Meowsketeer. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, we have an interesting week. We're going to be talking, I think, a lot about the future of microtransactions this episode. We're also going to be talking, of course, about the Epic Jam and the content around that, namely combat updates. So to help us out with that, David, you're joining us in for that. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Tanis, you're here as you always are.
Hey, you can't do a show without me, right?
That's right.
I'm Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson.
Those are two legends, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
All right. So, David, you know, we were just chatting pre-show. You're feeling a lack of PVM updates at RuneFest. And, I mean, you do have one coming in the Epic Jam. So I guess that's good, right?
Yeah, that part's good, but... assuming that God Wars Dungeon 3, or they're calling it God Wars 3, I think God Wars Dungeon 3 is what they're calling it, comes out when it's supposed to come out, it'll be the longest between bosses that we've gone since EOC was released, which is kind of a new thing. So Solak being the previous big boss that we got. And yeah, I thought it was strange how little coverage PVM got, because even if updates don't necessarily get delivered, it seems like PVM is the section where they're always promising big things. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure both of you remember the idea of the raids expansion being a thing for year after year after year. And we never actually got it, but there was always like a new idea cooking. And there was almost always been a separate PVM council that was filmed and put on YouTube for us to watch, and that didn't happen either, which was pretty strange.
Yeah, I think when it comes to raids, it's, you know, raids are one of the hardest pieces of content to get into difficulty wise, and I think they want to reapproach it in a different way. And I think we can all agree here that raids probably should have been what the Elite Dungeons were to start off with.
Yeah, I've written about the Elite Dungeons. I'm a big fan of them as a concept, but I think that there's a big difference between those and a boss like Telos or Solak that you just, you know, you fight the same boss over and over. In terms of that content, it doesn't seem like we're getting one for quite a while, which I'm a little bit sad about. But
at least, you know, there's the talk that there wasn't PVM at RuneFest, and I wanted to, you know, just open up with that because you said that, and I think it's fair to allow both sides of the PVM and skilling equation to have their day in the sun. You know, we had lots of skilling at RuneFest, so we'll talk a bit about PVM now as we start off on the podcast this week. But we'll get more into that with the Epic Jam and the PVM showcase that was done. So first and foremost, we have the Oddments refresh this week. And this is something that is making some players scratch their heads. And I want to delve into this because I think that this is the beginning of something that players are going to love at the end of the day. So to summarize what happened with this, the Oddment store got refreshed this week. And with this, they improved the Oddment exchange rate on all items. And this means that you'll receive double or triple the Oddments depending on gem rarity. And the price of items in the Oddments store is also increasing just slightly, but the end result is going to be that the Oddments process will let you net more than you did before. Finally, they've also doubled everyone's Oddment balance, so if you had 25k, you're going to now have 50k. And plus, they've also added new items in the Oddments store, such as proteins, small portable packs, and magic notepaper, as well as tweak the prices of items to offer greater rewards for bonus XP options over direct XP lamps. And in the future, They will be limiting both the number of items that can be purchased and adjusting how oddments are obtained. All right. So this is theory time now for me on this. My theory, and this is a big one, and you know, as keep in mind, everything I say here could be proven wrong in a week or 2 weeks or a month's time. I think this is the first step to removing Treasure Hunter.
I think it's the first step too to going to a method we talked about a few weeks back.
Right.
You know, of just buying what you want directly.
Because so many countries are looking into the rules regarding chance-based loot boxes, and countries like Belgium have banned them entirely. So I think that if this is going to eventually have to be in a place where, say, the UK says, hey, we're banning chance-based loot boxes, then Jagex has this as an option to go with. And I think they also have this as an option to go with should the player sentiment towards this oddment refresh be off the chart. And the idea is that if they were to ban loot boxes in the UK, or if the sentiment towards this oddment refresh was off the chart, they will remove Treasure Hunter entirely. And with that, you'll get oddments randomly while skilling or doing combat in-game, but you'd also be able to buy oddments directly with bonds, which you can, of course, purchase with real money, or you can purchase with your GP in-game, negating the whole idea of purchasing Treasure Hunter keys. And the net benefit at the end of the day is you know exactly what you're getting, whether it be the magic notepaper, the XP lamps, or the bonus XP stars. And I think that they want to put a higher weight on oddments so that there is a perception when you buy Treasure Hunter keys that you're getting something that's useful. And there's a chance to get something, of course, the big, shiny, rare item out of it as well. But should this strategy, of course, take off like a rocket ship, or a country like the UK or the US ban chance-based loot boxes, they have the option to go oddments directly.
Yeah, and I also like that they're putting a greater emphasis on the bonus XP. I mean, that's I don't have any problem with bonus XP. Lamps, you know, I wish they weren't there, but they are, so that's fine. Make them expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so no, I think this is a positive sign, and I think, well, you know what? I think there's a lot of positive signs in this direction. So,
yeah, I mean, if you parse out the post in general, as for what they want to do with this, you can actually see that here. Because if you look at the post and where they mention Treasure Hunter, they said we wanted to make you aware of some of the changes we're making to Treasure Hunter, and they have said also in the past that they would like to find a way to move beyond Treasure Hunter. And I need to clarify this because there were some comments about it and talk about it, I think, either in the Discord or the YouTube channel last week on this about why we're so excited about Rune Pass, Tanis. It's not because of the Rune Pass we were offered back then, but it's because of the potentials that they could do with Rune Pass in regards to cosmetics and also in terms of maybe, you know, throwing some of the bonus XP in there. As well,
and getting away. I mean, it was a way to get away from Treasure Hunter, and it was also a way to get the same things through gameplay or through paint. Like, it had those parallel tracks. I think that's what we liked about it. But mainly to try to do something else, to encourage the experimentation of trying a new method, because Treasure Hunter has a pretty bad rap in. And see, the oddments is the way that they're going to be able to sell the XP, because at the end of the day, and I've seen this from various posts, various places, people are like, even though some people are really excited about the current Treasure Hunter promotion because they like cosmetics or whatever, at the end of the day, the XP is probably what sells day in and day out. And so there needs to be a way for them to do that. And I think Augments is that way.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that on the whole, if they were to throw this in as a refresh option, everybody would be a lot more happy because let's face it, Treasure Hunter and Squeal of Fortune have a negative stigma. Squeal of Fortune had such a negative stigma, it had to be killed, and they even had the option of killing Yelps in one of the goblin quests. So
and didn't learn a damn thing from it, did they?
So
I wonder if we'll get to kill this guy.
Throwing
on a treasure chest. His name is Alice?
Her.
Oh, okay, her.
Her. The treasure hunter woman is named Alice, yes.
Well, however, whatever she identifies as, let's put her in a chest and lock it and throw it away.
Then I think they'd say you have spousal abuse problems.
I ain't married to her. Are you? I mean,
or
she ain't my spouse.
Or woman abuse problems, sorry.
Well, I think that if you're right about this, that'd be a really positive step. It's hard for me to imagine the existence of this game without Treasure Hunter now. It just seems so ubiquitous. But I think that you're right, that the trend seems to be that games are going to have to figure out a way to make money with microtransactions that don't use random loot boxes.
Yeah, and I mean, so many other games do this well. Rocket League did it well before they said they're moving away from crates entirely. Overwatch does it. And, you know, people just love their cosmetics that are associated with it. But there's also the side that, you know, we have a question, can cosmetics actually truly sell in RuneScape? And normally we don't do this. Normally we don't talk about Treasure Hunter promotions as the type of update, but we are going to do that this week. But what I actually want to do with that first, and you know, you guys are going to think I'm trying to advertise something on this front here because of this, but what I suggest everybody do, if they like the way that this Oddment refresh is, this weekend or within, you know, the week of the Oddment refresh happening, use any Oddments you have and purchase something on the Oddment store other than Treasure Hunter keys. So
yes,
purchase XP, purchase lamps, purchase magic notepaper. You know, I'm going to just have a look at where I'm at this weekend. And I'm going to use up all the oddments I have because it's over 30K of them at this point, and I'm just going to use them and blow them to just send a signal that, hey, this is a good thing to do. So that's what I'm doing this weekend.
I'm doing the same thing, and I'll be looking for bonus. Stock up on your bonus. If you end up changing your mind, you probably still have a portable Vic token because I know you bought one. Everyone bought one. I know you got them in your bank. I got one. And, I mean, that way they'll at least see that they're being used, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Because if they're not being used, then they're going to say, oh, well, this was okay. It just went over very well. And, you know, one thing that kind of concerns me is that there was no real notice in game that oddments were doubled. It was up to this news post. And, you know, you podcast listeners who are listening to this right now, of course, have probably checked the news. If you haven't, you're getting the news from us right now. But I believe that there is a portion of the player base out there that doesn't actually check the RuneScape news on a weekly basis. So they have no idea that their oddments were doubled and that the store has been updated, I would say.
Oh, I'd say that's a good chance of that. I mean, there might be some word of mouth if people in your clan might be talking about it or something. But, you know, if I wasn't in this bubble, I wouldn't have probably even known.
Yeah. And, you know, this leads nicely into the next thing we want to talk about here. And as I was saying, we don't normally talk about Treasure Hunter promotions because there's just too many of them. But this week we actually have a Treasure Hunter promotion that is different. And to all of our knowledge here, they've never done anything like this before. And that's the Catwalk Musketeer, I guess, like musketeer. That's, you know, you call things musketeers. You can't just attach meow in front of it and expect people to have it roll off the tongue in the same way.
Meowsketeers.
Okay. All right. Fine.
Come on, meow, Shane.
No, I am not doing that on the podcast. So from October.
Now, are we going to have a problem here?
I think we should instead go with Meow 12088.
Oh my god.
Let the memes begin.
No. No. No.
Meow Brew actually makes a lot of sense.
So from the 24th to the 28th, you can claim Felix, which is a cat pet. And you might say, but we have other cats in game. But Felix has an expensive wardrobe that you can customize, and he has misplaced it. And it's up to – I'm going to just read this next sentence. It's up to you to replenish his closet so he can once again strut his stuff as a cat of the walk.
Honestly, I'm being sold by this advertising. Now I feel like I have an obligation. This cat needs to be clothed.
Yeah, you can't.
And little did you know, all you needed was me to read out the Treasure Hunter post and it would work as an advertisement. So his favorite outfit is the Meowsketeer, which is a memento from his time in the Renmark. And there's 7 pieces to get, including the hat, the scarf, the trousers, the boots, the gloves, and the rapier, and the tunic. And then, once you've unlocked all 7 pieces of the Meowsketeer outfit, you'll be able to give Felix a well-deserved makeover with 2 different fur retextures, including a ginger fur retexture and a Siamese fur retexture.
Huh. Okay.
And once every item has been unlocked, any items will transform into tradable tokens.
Oh, neat.
And this is very different. We've never had anything like this on Treasure Hunter before. And you'll note that the word XP is missing. The word bonus XP is missing. The word cosmetic override for your weapons is missing. The word lucky chaotic or lucky vertus is also missing on this. Smoldering lamps, lucky they're not vertus. Here. So I want to just take a moment and show everybody out here that, you know, this is an opportunity, once again, just like the Oddment refresh, that if this goes well, there's a chance they could do more of this in the future. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? You guys going to load up on some keys this weekend to complete Felix?
I might throw in on this just because I think you have to show what you believe in with your money. I mean, that as a consumer, that's your power, is whether to buy something or not. And as much as we like to think like a boycott against a certain promo or something is going to have much of an effect, this actually has an effect as well, like spending. So if you are the person that buys keys, I mean, not everyone does. A lot of our listeners don't interact with Treasure Hunter, but if you do interact with it, if you are someone that buys keys, and if you do like this promotion and the direction it's going, this is the time to do it.
And to just think that, do we have any other pets in game that have this level of customizability associated with them?
No.
So the quest pet doesn't – you can't really customize outfits or anything,
no.
Right? It just like – you get the lore hound. Yeah, it just kind of changes its look, right, mm-hmm.
Based on how many quest points you have.
Yeah.
Right. And then the – yeah, so I think that's the one I could think of. But this is way more than that.
The anima pet, it has like 10 different versions of it, but you can't switch back and forth, I don't think.
Right.
And, I think what we're seeing here are also 2 different A-B tests as well. For anyone who's not aware, what you do in your A-B testing is you try one thing 1 week and then you try a different thing the other week. And you can measure which one was more successful by saying, was this on or was this off at the given time? And recall that, over the last few weeks we've had what I think we could call very traditional Treasure Hunter promotions, right? You put money in, you get keys, and then you get money out, you get lamps or, the Shadow Vertus items just as an example. But in this case, this is something completely different, tied in with the Oddments refresh. And I think what that does is say that this week is kind of a test silo week to see where that goes. And, you know, for those of you guys who watch marketing, for those of you guys who pay attention to, I guess you could say, cash flows, you would be able to see what exactly is coming out of this in terms of that they want to see if they can net more from this. And if it is successful, I would say we could probably expect to see more of these. So if you like this, this is the week to use your keys if you have them or if you buy them to participate in this promotion. So,
hey, if you're really into PVM, go kill something, buy some bonds. Like, you know, I mean, that didn't cost you nothing. You're gonna
No. How do you feel about that, David?
I'm with you. I've always said the best skilling method in the game is to do Telos, sell orb sets, and then buy keys. So this is, you know, just a better version of that.
There you have it, folks. All right. We do have, of course, the Epic Game Jam stuff to talk about. And aside from that, I do just want to go through this week's patch notes here, because there are quite a few of them. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't do that on the show as we do each and every week before we get into, of course, what you guys are wanting to hear about Mod Warden. So, running through the patch notes this week, some combat fixes. Fixed an issue where players in Legacy Combat Mode were switched into Revolution when gaining a level in a combat skill.
What a weird thing, but sure. That's so odd.
Yeah, it's probably some weird edge case somewhere that's, you know, just changing the combat state. Graphics-wise, a rare bug where Alina could not be found in her house during Morning's End has been fixed. The chickens outside of Daemonheim have been graphically updated, giving more credence to the idea that they're going to be doing that low-level chicken and cow dungeon. I am, of course, ad-libbing there. The patch note doesn't say that. Yaktui storage will now display stored items in full color and no items as transparent, as well as always displaying zero if there are no items in either your backpack or storage. And, of course, that's for the Charm Sprite minigame, which with the Hunter rebalance this past summer was moved back to its original purpose of acting as a way of getting charms for people who don't want to do combat. In other changes, swapping between the different enchantments for the gauntlets awarded from the Family Crest quest could no longer cause the game to crash. We did have a patch note about that a few weeks back, so this was likely a dangling issue on that. Fixed a crash that could occur when banking runecrafting pouches. That is probably something related to the bank rework, which, I mean, if this is all we're getting in terms of bugs from the bank rework, I think we did a pretty damn good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that part makes sense to me, because I think that the reason for that is that when you're doing runecrafting through the Abyss, people have it set up with mouse keys, so they're withdrawing and putting pouches in at warp speed.
Okay.
So my guess is that they just didn't test for like warp speed mouse key interactions.
Yeah, which,
that kind of makes sense to me. Like, we rag on QA a lot, but this one, I see why it would have slipped through.
Yeah. Crashes can no longer occur when using a Celtic Knot skip ticket. Ensured players who completed the Unstable Foundations quest prior to the Ashdale tutorial are treated as completing the new tutorial island, so that they are not trapped in a timey-wimey ball of weirdness where RuneScape thinks they're still on tutorial island. Simply logging in should now free the suffering few from this terrible purgatory. Yeah.
If they're still there... Like, how long would you let that go before you found something else to play?
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you had an account that was really old in that regard and you decided to come back and you were stuck there. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Unstable Foundations is not the quest. Unstable Foundations is that old Ashdale tutorial. You know, Ashdale had so much promise.
It continues to haunt us.
It did. But was it Ashdale, or was it just that quest? That quest that started to introduce the different, you know, the way that they did this.
The lighting clues, which is, and the...
Yes.
Whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was mainly the quest. But yeah. I feel that Ashdale was also very nice because it was one of the first real graphically flashy areas of the game. It didn't look like the rest of the game world. And people at the time were kind of upset about that, that there was no continuity in the way that it looked. But it looked really good and paved the way for other environments that we know now, like the Ark and whatnot.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was pre-NXT, so,
yeah.
You know. Of course, it looked different. It was 10 years newer than yeah. a lot of the other stuff.
And I think this also just shows that Unstable Foundations was probably an error, and they should have just stuck with Tutorial Island all along.
Yep.
Well, and it kept bouncing. I think that was the biggest problem, was to, from Tutorial Island to Birth or up to Ashdale to, you know, just went round and round.
Yeah. But that's, of course, it's not without saying that we wouldn't be doing what RSVMV Update does every week if we didn't talk about quests. And I would just like to remind everybody, if you haven't done it, A Shadow Over Ashdale is a truly amazing quest if you haven't done it yet. So there is still reason to go to Ashdale.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, you can go every week and get you a 20K bonus.
Yeah, you could. You could. Right. I don't do that, but I guess you could.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a 2-minute fight.
I do it on my Iron Man for Herblore, just because that's such a hard skill to do on Iron Man.
Yeah.
Also on your Iron Man, remember Herbie Werby on Anachronia?
Yeah, I just started doing that as well. It's weird. It's really, really good. It feels like it's the XP for a daily, not a weekly, but you know, whatever, that's fine. Still do it once a week.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty cute.
Yeah, and I mean, you can also purchase 2 totem pieces from that as well. So there's that.
Yep.
So moving on. And one more thing. Speaking of distractions and diversions related to the skills going to 120, there is that distraction and diversion on the Lost Grove that gives you weekly farming XP.
Oh, I thought that was just woodcutting.
No, it's farming and hunter.
Oh, why did it? Did that come out the same week as Overgrown Idols or something?
No, it came out the week after RuneFest 2017 when The Lost Grove came out.
Great. I didn't realize it was farming. I'll have to start doing that. Thanks.
The Elder Divinations Chronicle teleport option will now teleport you slightly closer to the Chronicle hand in locations, either at May Stormbrewer or the Guthix Monument. Now here's one. The chat system will now suggest taking a break from the screen after 4 hours of continuous play.
Good, I guess. Has anyone ever, like, have any of you guys ever had 4 hours of continuous play? Well, David probably has.
Oh, but, yeah, all the time.
I mean, yeah. I've never not gotten up or done something in 4 hours.
No,
there's no way.
Never. And I've also never, of course, hit the 6-hour logout or whatever.
Yeah, I've never done that either.
And I know you guys listening to this are probably saying, what? How can you not? Because I know many, many people do hit that wall.
Yeah, so. I hit it all the time.
My back would hit that wall first.
Same. Just same.
The very first time that I ever saw a warning message like this was Metal Gear Solid 4 Guns of the Patriots used to have the like thing where Snake would be smoking a cigarette during like between things, and they would tell you to stop playing too much screen time, and then there'd be like a also don't smoke warning message. But yeah, it's just like Solid Snake would literally take a cigarette break, and then they'd be like, you should take a break too.
And for anybody out there who has an Apple Watch, there's a thing you can do. You can program it to remind you to stand up every hour, and it will ping you on the hour if you haven't stood up for an hour.
Nice.
Deactivating an aura and then clicking on it will no longer trigger a new aura to replace it. That's a bit of a weird one. The portable crafter will now tan dinosaur hides. The collector's insignia now works with the Anachronia agility training, with XP bonuses triggered at the end of each of the 7 segments. And do you guys know what this is about?
I don't.
David, do you know what this is about?
What is it?
The collector's insignia on Anachronia?
No, I can't remember. What is it?
It gives you a higher chance of obtaining Codex pages when you complete parts of the Agility course.
Oh, sweet. That's great.
It really is. And you know where you get this?
Where?
Barbarian Assault.
Huh.
Yep.
What an interesting way to revive that content, or at least attempt to, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to go do Agility on Anachronia, the 99 or 120, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, you totally should. If it seems like it would make sense to you. But it seems like it'd be really hard to find a team. I guess you just find some friends who are willing to do it with you. Because the Agility bonus XP is really good from that mini game.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the main thing this was initially used for was having a chance at getting Dragon Full helmets from pyre ships.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, if you're wanting to do Agility and you're wanting to make the most money you can, get a collector's insignia. So, next up, previously, if a user was to destroy the sous chef outfit and was also to have the cooking gauntlets in their backpack, the cooking gauntlets would be destroyed as well. This has now been fixed.
That happened to me. I was doing my my weekly strange rocks for cooking, and that happened to me.
Oh. Why did you destroy the sous chef outfit? Do you not just keep it in your bank in a placeholder if you use it weekly, or do you just get it from Diego every week?
No, I just get it from Diego every week. Because I do strange rocks every Monday normally, or Tuesday, depending on work schedule, and so that's way too many outfits. Okay. I wouldn't have enough bank space.
All right. When the interface is set to legacy mode, if the player has a second action bar active, the original action bar will no longer break. The extra action bar, if you switch to that number, and the extra action bar's arrows will now change the bar being shown. Okay. That's a mouthful. I don't know exactly what it's describing. So I'm just going to move on. Players who haven't obtained a fire cape should no longer be assigned ice strike worm tasks by Slayer Masters. Okay.
Oh, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, because that's just burning your points.
Yeah. Elite screw. I called it a screw scroll again from back then. An elite clue scroll, I mean, from the treasure chest in the aquarium will now be added to the scroll stack if the player has a full inventory, or into the Charles Clue Carrier if in an inventory or pocket slot. So basically, what this means is that if you have your clue carrier with you, the clue scroll from the aquarium will go directly there. Runecrafting pouches can now only be destroyed and not dropped, and will now inform the player that if they contain essence, the content will also be destroyed along with the pouch before asking for confirmation. Good, because those things are a pain to get. The Festive Aura now shows the amount of experience left that it will attribute to its bonus when selected in the Aura Management interface, as well as when the buff icon is hovered while the Aura is active. And, you know, this is important as we are heading into December shortly. So we'll be using that Festive Aura. And I say shortly, but it's, you know, a month and a bit away, right?
Yeah, but it's starting to get cold, so.
Yeah, you know, yeah. We're supposed to get snow this weekend a bit.
Winter is coming.
It dropped down to the low 70s this week here, so definitely getting cold.
For mobile, based on player feedback, it's been made more easier to cycle between hidden, minimized, and maximized chat boxes sizes on mobile by tapping the envelope icon. On the mobile interaction menu will now appear to the left of right of where you tap, so you can see where you tapped. So on mobile, the interaction menu will now appear to the left or right of where you tap, so you can see where you tap. So what that means for those who haven't played mobile before is that if you tap, previously the interaction menu would appear right where your finger was, so you couldn't necessarily see the interaction menu right away, so it'll just appear to the left or the right of it to make room. Added tooltip information onto the three icons for total level, combat level, and quest points on mobile. And when dungeoneering, the map is now fixed to the center of your screen, you're still able to interact with the game world with it open. So if you want the Dungeoneering map, it's going to be right on the center of your screen on mobile.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that, but there's really nowhere else to put it.
I mean, I guess on mobile, I don't think I'd be using the map on mobile, but
I could not imagine Dungeoneering on mobile.
That's just what I was about to say.
That does not sound good.
Alrighty, so that's it for the patch notes this week. We're going to move on to the next part of this show, which is something that was a bit surprising this week. And this was a message from Mod Warden. I'd be interested to know why he chose that mod name, Warden. It's like he's the warden of the jailhouse, right? Is that what he is? Is he the warden of the jailhouse of Jagex?
Well, if he's the warden, who are the inmates?
Is it the J-Mods or the players?
The J-Mods, the guards?
It's just Alice. and Squeal.
Alice from Treasure Hunter and Yelps from Squeal of Fortune.
Yeah, Yelps. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, Mod Warden is the new executive producer. And he says, what does an executive producer do? Well, the executive producer is the person who is most responsible for all things RuneScape, the overarching vision and strategy, the game and developing the team behind it, our relationship with the players, and the commercial plans that will allow us to keep making the game for many years to come.
So, everything. Buck stops with him.
That's right. And he says that he's taken a few weeks to get acclimated, get to know the team, the initiatives, the projects, the priorities, learning how the team operates, and getting a read on the sentiment from the players, which I don't think is a hard thing to do in this day and age. And he says there's lots of history to understand and perspectives to consider. He was also at RuneFest this past year. And he wants to kick off a new era of building a relationship with you all. And he says we need to greatly improve our understanding of your priorities and concerns and build a better level of trust around things such as content plans, quality of life improvements, commitments, communication, transparency, duty of care with our players, account security, and our business model, specifically around microtransactions. Okay, so where do you guys think he's going to go?
Where do I think he's going to go? From so this is just a message, just the news message.
This
right?
is just not the news message,
not the live stream. Okay. Yeah, I think. Man, I don't know. I don't know. And that's just like the very beginning.
Okay. Well, we'll save it then.
Yeah, I need more. Okay. I need to get to the other part.
All right. We'll save it for that then. He went through the current dev structure of the episodic content team, the live ops team, and the core experience team. Then he talked about monetization and particularly the way to go forward. And he says, I see it as my job to ensure that monetization takes a form that adds to your experience and not detracts from it. And the truth is that membership alone is not sufficient to keep the game healthy and evolving. It is vital that any monetization strategy justifies its existence. It needs to be fun, balanced, and worth your time and rewarding. We need a monetization strategy that we can talk openly and proudly about, and you need to know that it's not just what we're doing, but why we're doing it. Our commercial content can't sit apart from the world of Gilanor. It must feel authentically a part of it while giving players more choice. And on this note specifically, I just want to point everybody to an Informer article that I did at informer.rsbnb.com where I go over Jagex's 2018 financial reports. And put simply, as it is, more than half of RuneScape 3's revenue comes from microtransactions. Without microtransactions, Jagex as a whole would still be profitable, but RuneScape 3 would be only bringing in about 22 million pounds worth of revenue, give or take a few hundred thousand. And the give or take is used because this report does not separate RuneScape 3 from old school microtransaction revenue, which, while we don't think about it, old school does have microtransactions in the form of bonds. So put simply, if these microtransactions were to go away, Jagex would need to do some form of increased membership prices or a scaling back of the dev team. And I say the alternative is a reformation of the microtransaction revenue. And for what it's worth, I did write this before Mod Warden's post, and in the live stream this week, he said that they will not be increasing membership prices. So we can rule that one out effectively on this.
Well, I mean, that's
and
good.
That part is nice.
Yeah, I already
think it's pretty high.
Yeah, I don't think they could get away with raising it.
We get. Yeah, like, I think this game is unbelievable if you're new to it, just of how much content it has built up over the years. But I think for players like myself who are completionists and have done pretty much, you know, within reason, everything the game has to offer, it's like it's already kind of at the peak for what I'd be comfortable with for the amount of new stuff that we get.
Are you month to month or do you buy the yearly plan?
I buy the premier, whatever the highest tier premier is called.
I always think about it in terms of, like, if this were just any other game that you were buying on Steam, right? I look at it, like, every, what, 3 or 4 months, there's usually going to be, like, a DLC. And so it was what I paid in subscription over the last 3 or 4 months. Did I get enough content that I would have paid that as a DLC bundle type thing? As long as that's going, then it makes sense. But I think when that ratio gets out of whack, that's when you go, well, I don't know. And you have to kind of start thinking twice.
He then said that they have a far more detailed look on the way monetization works next week. And he wants to make sure that players understand that he is entirely committed to transparency and trust. And we need all of you to have a complete understanding of what our monetization means, and I want you to trust how we're handling it. Saying this, I'm also acutely aware that the worst thing I can do right now is rush out a reactionary strategy or make shallow promises that won't help any of us. We know we've got a long way to go on this, and I'm absolutely committed to hearing and responding to your thoughts, but I want a greater understanding before I do. Have we correctly understood your concerns? Is what we're doing making things better? We have a number of plans in place and some new ideas that we will begin to test with you very soon. Bing, bing, bing. What do we get this week?
Yep. So it looks like some A-B testing is going on there, right, Shane?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he says, let's talk. A big thanks to those of you I met at RuneFest and a big hello to the rest of you. And he set up a brand new email address where you can share your thoughts with him about anything RuneScape related. In particular, he says, has a new quest delighted you or frustrated you? Is our latest microtransactions a good value or do you hate it? Did we bust your action bar again? Has a new tech tweak improved the game or did you prefer it before? In any of these cases, you can reach out to me directly at askmodwarden@jagex.com. Caveat is he won't be able to always respond directly. And it's not a player support avenue.
That is still awesome. Like, that's really, 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 really cool. And I so hope it doesn't come back to bite him in the ass. Like, that was my first thought. I was like, oh, God, please don't give this man just nothing but crap. Because I think that's just... That's putting your money where your mouth is when you're talking about, you know, transparency type of thing. And I appreciate that.
And what he's effectively done here, and I can say this because, you know, I've performed a similar feat like this recently, is that one of the things you ought to do when you're getting acclimated into a new environment like this is you need to get the lay of the land of where your team is and where your constituents are. And he's doing this perfectly with this. And the fact he's also taking the unprecedented action of providing an email address directly where he can be reached is also an important move too, because this signifies a massive change from how things were before he got here compared to how things are now. And what this is effectively doing is effectively turning the channel from past to future.
Yeah. Everything that he's talking about when it comes to microtransactions, I think, is actually very good. It's very positive. He's saying the right things, right? So there's every reason to be optimistic. Unfortunately, I think there was just one line that could have been maybe phrased a little different, because no matter how true it is, we know it's true because we've been through the financials. We've talked about it on the show. You've written the article. But it didn't go over well with – I'm going to say probably – I would say a vocal minority, but I've actually seen it bubbling up even in my own clan Discord, which is like – and my clan is the retirement home, okay? Like the one that the main is in, like it's – nobody really gets ruffled about anything because we're all old. But they didn't like the sound of, oh, you can't survive off of membership anymore. Even though that's correct in the way that he's trying to explain it, it was just, I don't know, I think he could have phrased differently.
That just shouldn't have been mentioned at all. And it should have been mentioned when the microtransaction talk happens.
Yeah, like, and he was trying to be transparent, but people, right. I don't think...
And anyone who has a business background or has looked at financial statements before will be able to see that exact thing if they look at Jagex's financials for 2018 and 2017.
But see, to me, I don't know if I agree, because I think that if that exact post had been made absent that line, the perception would have been an expectation for big sweeping changes or potentially even removal of MTX or full integration into the game or something, which I think would have resulted in far worse backlash.
So you're saying
later.
It brings it to reality then?
Yeah, like to me it seems like we're going to change things so that we're totally open and honest. I think that that's incommensurate with a status or with a post that wasn't, that didn't include that, or like him not saying that on the stream. Like I feel like he has to break those eggs and drop them on the ground and let them shatter, because otherwise I feel like the blowback later would be way worse and it would seem like more empty promises. Because I think people hate empty promises more than almost anything else.
Yeah, and what is it, Tannis, we said about straight talk?
Yeah, that's kind of what is needed.
And, you know, while it would be it would have a much better look and you would avoid that community backlash if you didn't put that in the post and waited until the microtransaction talk, whenever that is, next week or the week after, David does have a point that this brings it back to reality.
No, David has a point. I think he put enough context around it that – I mean, I would have understood it. I don't know. I mean –
I knew that.
I was just afraid that, like, I don't know if he was familiar with the way certain communities work yet within the larger RuneScape community. Because the minute that I read that, I was like, this is going to be all over Reddit. This is going to be all over it. And it was.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no one mentioned anything else the guy said, which I thought was unfortunate, and it was all like he was getting roasted like immediately. I'm like, whoa, hey,
and,
we didn't.
And that's
even
what I said. If you want to, you know, have the message be the message, then you would have been wise to leave that out.
Yeah, I mean, I totally think David has a valid point. I just I don't know. I didn't know if it was that or if it was, like I said, if he just didn't realize how some players can be. I don't know, but I feel like he said so much more than just that.
You really have to parse it through,
and we should give him a chance.
Yeah,
You know, right now we don't know. We don't know.
Well, we see two of the experiments live in game right now. The Augment Shift and the Treasure Hunt.
I don't know when he started there. Right.
So I think it was the beginning of August.
Okay. So that gives us a little bit of something to go on. And I wish we had gotten a little bit of background. Like I would like to know, like if he had came from another development studio.
Yeah.
You know,
let me see if I can pull any of that would have been cool. Right now.
Well, if nothing else, I think that he certainly now knows how seriously the community takes this issue.
Yeah.
If he didn't know before, now he knows, which I also think is useful. Like it's good for both sides to be honest about how serious this is, because I think that for a lot of people, this is the biggest detractor in the game right now for them, and the reason why they're either playing less or not playing or upset about the fact they're playing. Like this is like the biggest issue, and they have to deal with it inevitably.
Oh, for sure. I totally agree. And I mean, the only difference I see is, I don't know how much it actually affects people's play, but it affects their attitude and what they're talking about and how they're influencing others. You know, whether that becomes this like negative cloud, or whether people are excited about the next new thing, you know. So I think we need to give him a chance. And you can do it. I mean, I even gave Trump a chance. I mean, it didn't last long, but I gave him a chance, okay? And that's what we need to do here, because this is pretty normal, like for someone new to come in. It's done a little bit of restructuring with the teams, it looks like. So let's see what we can do. And there's already testing for the different monetization strategies. We just have to see where it goes.
Okay. I have figured a lot of stuff out in the time you've been talking here.
You're welcome.
All right, well, his name, Ward, comes from his last name, Ryan Ward.
Oh, okay.
You guys sitting down?
Uh-huh.
He was most recently employed by Blizzard as the product director for Overwatch. He was previously the director of product at Epic Games and a producer at Nexon, LucasArts, CCP, and BioWare, working on respectively Fortnite, Star Wars titles, EVE Online, and the Mass Effect franchise.
Wow.
All of those had kick-ass monetization strategies. All of them did. I'm getting all right. Dude, Overwatch was one that we keep pointing to.
Yeah.
No shit. And Blizzard, BioWare. I'm trying to think of which. For some reason.
We also know that he either knows a ton about or experienced all of the blowback.
Oh, the
Battlefront.
That's the old.
So he's
right.
Got experience with both sides, which is.
But I bet the Star Wars comes from. That's the Old Republic. I think that's BioWare,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was.
That, dude, they have a beautiful monetization. Like, that game is. I wish I could play it better. Like, I wish it was more accessible.
Okay, so actually. Here's what happened. Jagex hired him to come fix Treasure Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it seemed
like. Yeah.
Because your guy's reaction to the names I just rattled off spells the entire reason you hire him. Because you can have Mod Osborne or you can have a Mod Mark come in. And they can, you know, restructure the company so you have those, you know, various teams and whatnot, right? But you don't have someone who has this industry experience, and that's why you hired this guy.
Well, and look what Fortnite did, dude. Look what Fortnite did with their like with their battle pass and all of their like their cosmetics. Like,
and what do we have this week for a Treasure Hunter promo?
Over and over and over and over. It's like,
and what do we have this week for a Treasure Hunter promo?
Yeah. No, wow, that's cool, man. Nice research there, Shane. That really that opened up the gates right there.
All right, so let's move on. Let's move on to the live stream from this week then, because they did also have him on the couch this week to talk about various things. And, you know, I think this follows nicely into what we were just chatting about with this. So they brought him in, and he said, and, you know, these are his exact words, he said he's taking a look at things that are out of whack. In particular, players are talking, but Jagex isn't talking back. Treasure Hunter, follow the rules of the land where they are, and start looking at the duty of care, which is a term we haven't heard before. What this effectively means is make sure that, yes, we're making money, but also let's make sure that our players are healthy and we're providing healthy game experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the live stream, I thought, had a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I liked a lot of what he was saying, but there was also some things that I was a little wary about. And I don't know what sense he meant this in, but he spoke a few times about balancing, and that was a huge red flag to me, because I'm like, when I hear someone say balancing, I know where this is going. They ain't balancing Telos money. They're going to balance the XP. And instead of doing what we keep telling them to do, which is fix the problem, we're going to be, could be looking at nerfs. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying that made me a little bit wary to, like, okay, I'm gonna watch for that. Because maybe we can push back on that so that it doesn't. But everything else I thought was really positive. And I thought, yeah, this is a.
Yeah, and another key thing he said, you know, he said we do this internally, but it's not conveyed to the players. Rewards need to be generous in the right ways, but not in unbalanced ways. And you took that as a way of balancing out things that, you know, you might feel that are, I think, on the XP side of the curve. But what I took this as was that they want to effectively rebalance out Treasure Hunter and whatnot.
See, and that, I mean, yeah, probably, especially given
how I interpreted it too. It,
you know, especially given the background that you just found out, that's true. It's just, I'm a little gun shy from this summer. Like, when I hear balancing and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, great. What are they going to hit me on next? You know, like, y'all done hit, you know, I mean, we had quite a summer with that. So, I mean, yeah, that's good. If you guys think that's the way it went, then that's great.
Because that's all the hard balancing in game right now, except for maybe safe cracking and deep sea fishing, or sorry, not deep sea fishing.
I was like,
the waterfall is done.
Like, Shane, are you high?
What?
Like, no deep sea fishing.
No, I meant the waterfall and safe cracking, because pretty much every other skill is balanced in terms of XP. When you think of it, there's nothing that is truly over the top.
I don't even think waterfall fishing is to.
Yeah. That's my own personal vendetta coming through.
I know. You just don't like that it's there. If that waterfall was in Fremenic, you wouldn't have as big of a problem with it.
He did say there was also, of course, no plans to increase membership fees, which we had already alluded to. And, you know, I'm actually going to put a link into this article from Gamma Sutra about this. They have a statement even from Mod Pips on the hiring of Mod Warden. Mod Pips said, the huge talent we've managed to capture from across the industry and development, of course, but across from all parts of the business is just one of the many highlights in 2019. As well as hitting a number of records for RuneScape in its 19th year, the success of Old School Mobile on iOS and Android has been awesome, pioneering the full MMO experience on mobile, achieving more than 8 million installs, and winning both BAFTA and Develop Awards. We're confident that we can build on that with the launch of RuneScape Mobile, which launches in early access later this year. And this was in the release talking about hiring Mod Ward. Mod Warden says now, Jagex is a very special place for me. Not only do I get to lead a team that has created one of the most successful online games, but I get to work alongside a team of artisans and game makers, perfect mix of new and veteran talent. I like to say it's peanut butter and chocolate, aha, kind of moment. And I'm committed to working on things right now that our amazing players will benefit from in the years to come.
How stupid are the people going to feel that made all them posts about,
yeah,
we can't survive and this was on the first thing when you brought in the person that
is, and the first thing you see when you Google Mod Warden is a Reddit thread saying that they're freaking out that he doesn't even play RuneScape.
You know what? I don't care. Like, nah, if you're bringing that to the table, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. I mean, that cracked the whole case, man. That was like how, seriously, like, I hope people feel like kind of dumb after this gets out.
Oh my! It goes even further. They hired an executive producer for Old School, Rob Hendry. Warthog Studios in the UK, working on the game Star Lancer. And he was head of studios at IdeaWorks, where he managed mobile game teams working on IPs such as Call of Duty, The Sims, and Metal Gear Solid. And that's for the Old School executive producer. And they're
going to get some MTX, but.
And they also hired a creative director named Gavin Irby, who will be working on their unannounced MMO. And he has previously been a part of Bungie.
I was thinking that thing was, we hadn't heard anything about it. No. So I thought maybe it was gone.
No.
Bungie, really?
Yeah.
How are they getting this kind of talent?
That's what happens when you have the money.
But do they? That kind of money?
I think so, yeah. They made 46, well, it was 47 million pounds profit in 2018.
See, this is hopeful. Why? Okay. New plan.
Gavin Irby was a design lead for Destiny 2. So are they making a RuneScape Destiny kind of game? They're calling it, in the post here, they call it an action role-playing game. So that is what Destiny is.
Yeah.
So they're probably trying to make RuneScape Destiny.
That'd be kind of cool. I mean, I don't want to have to shoot things because I suck at that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If I can hit it with a sword, we'll be all right.
And this is what happens when you venture out of the bubble and you do a bit of quick Google searching. You move out of the Reddit and the Twitter sewers and you move towards actual game presses. And lo and behold, there you are.
Yeah, so. And I am so on this. This is, yes. And instead of sending it to him, I'm going to have to send it to Reddit instead. I'm going to give peace a chance, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. All right. I feel like we have, just kind of hit the ball out of the park here. So let's just recap what else was in the live stream. On October 29th, open access for the Android beta will launch. iOS later next year as planned. So anybody who has an Android device and hasn't got into it, you can.
Yeah, I was sad that iOS isn't going to be for another year.
Yeah, and remember, aside from the technical stuff, it's the Apple limitations that any app developer on the iOS side can only have 10,000 beta slots.
Yeah.
So.
I really hope I get one of those.
Me too.
At least.
Me too. All right, let's have a look at the live stream from this week because
hello,
this
everyone.
Is very important. Yeah, that was Mod Shawnee in the background for folks who are listening. I just opened up the live stream. But the PVM Hub. The Game Jam PVM Hub, in addition to this. David, what are your quick thoughts on this?
I think it's fun. I think it looked really good. Initially, I didn't really like it that much, exactly. I thought that there were perhaps better ways of doing the portals and stuff. But Right, and the other, and also, like, it seems like the kind of thing. It's one of those things that you don't know you wanted it until you have it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I never knew that I needed platforms for all my pet collections. But as some of you might know, I'm mid IFB. I just 2 days ago actually completely finished with God Wars Dungeon 1, and I'm now working on God Wars Dungeon 2. I'm really excited to have a place where I could like see all my pets and stuff. I thought that the reward shop idea was fantastic. The notion that, you know, you get an extra little boost for PVMing regardless of your skill level, whether you're doing Telos or Bandos or Giant Mole, as long as you have a timer, you're accumulating points towards a reward shop. And from what it looked like, the rewards are things that are actually super useful for high level PVM especially. And so that's a good thing to see, I think.
Yeah, and you know, I was skeptical of this update too. I didn't think that we necessarily needed it, but you know, looking at this update, it looks really good graphically. And granted, it's still in the prototype phase. It is a new area. They were initially going to have an instance, but they wanted it to be a social experience. Around there, you're going to have a bank chest, a campfire, so you can get the bonfire
check,
bonus.
Check.
It can be upgraded, so it'll go all the way up to Elder Logs. It'll work exactly as you would expect. There's an Altar of War that will recharge your prayer and summoning points, as well as three portals. Two portals that you can attune to whatever bosses you want, and there will be one that will default to Reaper, and they can potentially also change it to featured. So if they were releasing a new boss, for example, they could set it so that portal would go to that new boss. They called it that. They said that they do have a dream for this content in the future, so that there'll be notice boards with seasonal high scores. It'll act as a community hub for PVM, looking for group activities as well, and a place where you can learn combat, because they're also bringing forward all the features of the Combat Academy, including dummies, min-max testing, and whatnot. You can also attuned to an adrenaline crystal that's there, and I think this one would be interesting to you, David. When you channel that, it will automatically fill up all of your adrenaline, then you can just jump right into the boss portal and go.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how many hours of my life has been spent building adrenaline, but I'm sure it's an excessive, just like building adrenaline between kills is something that just takes ages when it's accumulated over thousands of attempts and thousands of kills. So I think that's pretty neat, and I won't have to spend so much money on dummies once a month or once every 2 months on invention.
Yeah, and they said the purpose of dummies now will be that you take them in between phases,
right,
where there's a pause and you can just use them, whereas if you're just going to do a one-off boss, you can charge up here and go right off the bat, and you won't need to use a dummy for that case.
Yeah, which I think is a really good thing. I also love that they're reusing assets from that Halloween event, because I think that most people kind of panned it and didn't like it that much, myself included. But the graphical design of the Four Horsemen was super, super cool. And I really hope that this is part of a trend in the future where they deliver content to us slightly quicker just by reusing assets that look really interesting. Like, I think War looks cool. I think Pestilence looks super cool. And I really hope that all four of them find their way into the game more permanently so that we can interact with them on a more consistent basis.
You can also use the area up at the top. It's a social area they set up, and the idea behind this is when you set up a group at this area, it will show that you have a group icon above your head. And what they hope to do with that is they want to make it so that there will be a specific icon for a certain boss. So, for instance, all the Virago people will stand in one area, and if you're looking for a Virago group, you could just go there and see what's on offer. So that's one thing else they want to do with it.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm also super excited for this for my Iron Man, because the PVM portal is kind of hard to unlock on Iron Man just because maxing takes forever.
Yeah, but they said
this will be way better.
And they said, you know, the max guild will still work, but the max guild shouldn't be required to go bossing, which I think makes sense from the recent mantra that we've heard.
Yeah, and I've always kind of agreed with that. I've never had a problem with being maxed to boss. That's totally fine for me, but for a lot of other players who don't have as much time on their hands or, you know, only want to be PVM, I don't think that they should be forced to train their farming to 99 to be able to efficiently kill a Rakdos. I never thought that made sense.
Well, and that was like a sticking point with me in the lead up to this, because I never saw it like that, because I look at it like that's just an extra convenience for people who max, because you can get to any of those, but you don't need a boss portal to get to any of the bosses. But that being said, this live stream kind of sold me on the idea, and I mean, but the reason I didn't like it was, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, the PBM's getting their way again, as usual. Like, they whined, so now we're going to get a... But then I looked at what they were doing, I'm like, this looks good. Like, I don't even do that much bossing, but I'd love to have a place to put a few boss bets I have. That's kind of cool.
And that's the next thing, like, and I think that's what's going to sell this for people, is you can have this place where you can go see all your boss bets.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's. I mean, they did a good job. Like I said, I wasn't on board at all, just because I was like, are you kidding me? You know, like, come on. We should all suffer together. But, no, the design was just really good. And even I have to acknowledge, like, yeah, I think this would be a good thing. I think it's looking really good, and yeah, I mean, whatever. I'll suffer and grind through archaeology. That'll be fine. It'll be fun.
What does archaeology have to do with it?
Because that's what it would have required them to do to get back to their portal.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah. I mean... It is the case that I kind of feel like I've had the benefit of it for years, and I don't really mind other people doing it. And as far as archaeology goes, part of why skills like invention, you know, for sure, I don't know how much archaeology would be like this, but part of why skills are so unbelievably expensive at the start is because thousands of people like me will drop as many bills as we need to get our max capes as fast as possible. And so... none of the other people who like play the game in a more normal way or however you want to phrase it, has a chance to train the new skill until the PVMers are done with it.
Exactly. So,
well, so damn, like, you just sold me a
But there's still going to be people who are going to go for it, right?
Yeah, of course. But like, I was prepared to spend $5 to get archaeology to 99 ASAP, so I could get my portal back. And it's like, I don't. That's
but
not
now you
a
don't need to do
to
that,
right? And that's just like that's not a fun way to play the game, I don't think. And obviously it's not that they're forcing me to do that. It's a choice that I'm doing that I value the portal that much, but. It the portal is so good that it almost feels like I have to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, I think that's what they want to prevent.
I actually never thought about it in the way David just explained it, but I'm like, okay, so you're going to lower that's going to lower my prices.
I mean,
awesome.
Maybe it will, maybe I can't promise anything, but I know.
Well,
sure,
I mean, the first week will always be rough, but you know, yeah. I mean, after that, no, that, I think that was a good point. Like I said, I was already sold after the live stream. Now I'm double sold.
Yeah, PVMers are unrelenting and we have very deep pockets. So.
Oh, I know.
You're also going to be able to get marks of war, which right now you get one mark of war every 3 minutes. This is not a final time, and the costs are not final, but you'll also be able to buy aura refreshes and life refreshes here by just doing bossing.
Yeah, that life refresh thing is epic.
What is that?
It refreshes things like your defense cape.
Like your sign of life.
Okay.
Yeah, so it makes your sign of life go off cooldown, so... My main usage for it would just be to push Telos in Rage, because the way Phase 5 works is it's very easy to get kills if you purposely sign, but it's much more challenging to get kills if you do it the proper way. Obviously, if you're super, super good, then it doesn't matter, but I'm not quite that good for, like, above 1K. So basically just, like, free enrage pushing at Telos. Which arguably, debatably, that could be a bad thing. But for me, for selfish reasons, I like it.
And most of the things in this area are going to be unlocked at a certain number of boss kills, and it can be boss kills across any number of bosses. So one of them is unlocked at 100 boss kills. And you can also, of course, I don't know if they're going to add more to this mark shop or marks of war, but right now it just looks like aura refreshes and sign refreshes. So I like the way this is going. And I never thought I'd say that about a PVM update.
I'm wondering if the two of you have an opinion on this trend towards giving some sort of currency just for playtime. So we talked about oddments and the potential for that as like the future of Treasure Hunter, or like the currency events that we get. Like, how do you feel about the fact that just for interacting with PVM content, I'm getting a constant bonus of a currency just being added to my currency pouch? Like, do you think that's a good model for
I
the
think
game
it's
going
fine.
Forward? Do you think it's bad? Or, okay.
Because yeah, you do actually need to kill the boss. You can't just sit there and, you know, constantly
be
hitting
zeros. They did talk about that you have to actually successfully be killing bosses.
Well, I mean, and this stuff is, I'm assuming this is all untradeable items.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, you know, it's better than the, like, just ungodly money that comes out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on the PVM hub you want to mention?
Yeah, the last thing I would say is that for a lot of people, the barrier to high-level PVM, like Araxor is the classic example people will give, is that they feel like they have to max first to interact with it.
Yeah.
So I hope that this will encourage people to be more adventurous with the content that they play, because, you know, instead of losing 1 to 2 kills an hour purely because you don't have a max cape anymore, it's like now I feel like you could just, like, go out and try it instead of feeling like you have to do, like, if you hate Hunter and Agility, like, lots of people hate Hunter and Agility, for example. Like, you no longer have to feel like you have to do dozens of hours of Hunter and Agility just to go efficiently fight a boss, which
right.
I think is really neat.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, my barrier was, you know, get my ass beat all around the
right.
cave.
People have different barriers, for sure.
just a couple of preliminary numbers. 10 boss kills to unlock the teleport to the PVM hub, 100 boss kills to unlock the portals, 200 boss kills to unlock the Altar of War, and 1,000 boss kills to unlock the Adrenaline Crystal.
Hey,
I like hello.
And since you already have all these, it can be spread across any boss. You'll have that on day one.
That's great.
But you won't have the marks of war to buy the consumables. So the idea behind that is that even if you have everything already unlocked from that, you'll still have something to strive for there, whether it's the consumables or upgrading the bonfires.
I think I will have everything unlocked.
And each of the bonfire upgrades is going to take 1,000 of the logs. So 1,000 oak logs, 1,000 willows, 1,000 maples, 1,000 yews, 1,000 magics, and 1,000 elders.
Wow, 1,000 elders. Those are what, 5K each? That's great.
Yeah. I'm more concerned about the magics because there's too many of those in game right now, but that's a topic for a different day.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. All right. Next thing that they did show on this stream was scalable Solak in terms of removing duo mode in particular on this. What do you think of their idea on doing this for Solak?
This makes sense to me. I kind of write about this a little bit in my article, but it seems like the high-level PVM community is shrinking at an accelerating pace because the problem is that as people's friends stop playing, they stop playing, and then, like, basically groups of friends spiraling outwards stop, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, there's also a really good solution for this, too. And you're helping in provide this solution. There's a good clan out there called Clan Quest that, you know, it has the name Quest in its name and whatnot, but, you know, pretty much every other the week, it's any other scaling and PVM clan. You joined it, and you can attest to that. And
yeah,
it's a group of people that aren't ever going to go away. So if you're in that group where your PVM friends are dwindling and you also like questing, that's a place you should probably check out.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that it's a good idea because it was – I gave up on Solak farming because the number of times my group would have five or six, but it was an off time where everyone was doing something else, which, like, could not find the seventh person. Like, at least – I would put the minimum at 100 times this has happened where I've spent, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes in a group and we never quite got to seven, but we got to five or six and then couldn't go Solak. And that was always really frustrating to me. And a lot of people find duo to be too intense and demanding.
Yeah, so
and prefer a larger team. So I think this is a really huge boon for all of the people who have experienced what I've experienced, which is the consistent, like, you could get a group of five but not a group of seven, or get a group of six but not a group of seven, and then you just go, which is really nice.
Yeah, and what they're going to do now is the Solak will start with base HP of 2 million, so that's a minimum of two people and a maximum of seven, and for each additional person they're just going to add an extra 1 million HP on top of it. They say the intention of this is to make seven-man Solak about 16% faster.
Yeah, which I'm
do those numbers, you know, sound about right for you?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds about right. I'm not a balancing expert, so I don't know if that's, like, a good idea necessarily. But I assume that they've, like, crunched the numbers and have realized that that's not going to cause any problems with prices or whatever. It seems like Solak is not a super popular piece of content. So I think doing anything to make it so more people interact with a boss that, you know, clearly if you've played it, you could see just the sheer amount of hours that went into making it, because it's really a beautifully designed piece of content in many ways. And it's unfortunate that so few people interact with it. But I think hopefully this will help.
They're also making it so that the final phase will spawn manifestations on the base map when killed in the mind map on all modes. I don't know what that means, so maybe you can explain that.
Sorry, what does it say?
The final phase will spawn the manifestations on the base map when killed in the mind map on all modes.
Okay. So the way it works is there's the final phase, there's the mind realm and the main realm.
Okay.
And so there are these shadow manifestations that as you kill Solak in the base realm, they spawn in the mind realm to kill Solak.
Right.
And so you have to aggro those onto you in the mind realm so Solak doesn't die, basically.
Okay.
And if you kill them, they just disappear currently. It sounds like now if you kill them, they'll spawn up above in the base realm is what this sounds like.
Right, because
And the way it's currently fought, nobody kills those. So, like, I'm not really sure why – how important or relevant this is. But, like, the strategy now in Duo, for example, is you do some damage and then go down and use chain with the Sliske perk that, like, makes ricochet hit more targets, and you basically aggro them all onto you, but you don't actually kill them, you just aggro them onto you. So I guess that this just makes it harder if you kill them, but I don't know why you would do that anyways.
Okay, so the idea then is that if you're in the mind realm and you kill the shadow manifestations, it will spawn them in the base map.
Right, which shouldn't be relevant for anyone using modern strategies, but theoretically it could come up if you're using, like, a weird method.
All right. They also updated the lighting on Solak, so it'll use new lighting technology just to make it, I guess, have more area effects on the tree itself, so to speak. I don't notice the difference on the live stream because I don't remember what Solak looked like. before. Also, the drop rate on all modes is now going to be 1 out of 200 for all the various items, I guess.
What was it in Duo before?
I don't know what
okay.
it is.
Okay.
That might be something that I can look up quickly while we're on this one. But do you you think overall that this is going to make Solak more appealing?
For me, absolutely. Like I said, I was getting sick of groups that couldn't find more than 5 or 6 people. So yeah, for me for sure. And the other thing is that they really did mean it in a – so it's hard to explain exactly, but for newer teams, it really is the case that everyone has a role they have to play.
Yeah.
Like I've sold dozens and dozens of leeches where we've just had someone stand somewhere. So it's obviously possible with a very experienced team to have stragglers, but for new or like middling teams, every person really does play a role. So the other problem that would happen is that if you got a team of say 5 and then 2 people said, well, we can't find anyone, let's bring learners along. And then you brought 2 learners with you. It made kills impossible because they would just die. And obviously, like, there's a time and place for learning sessions, but it was always annoying when one or two learners would come, cause the kills to fail, and then the team would disband after a couple of failed attempts,
right?
Because we realized that we couldn't get kills.
So you think the HP shift and the change maybe for the manifestations will make that easier?
Yeah, so now, I don't think that'll make it easier for learners. I just think that it'll prevent that from being necessary, which in some people's minds, that's like a bad thing because it means like 4 or 5 elitists don't let learners come. But I think that there's a time and place for learners and there's a time and place for like, I want to get consistent kills. And I think it's okay to not want to go with learners all the time.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Okay. They're also going to be removing boss timers from Solak as well. I didn't quite catch what the reasoning behind that would be. Do you have any ideas why they do that?
I don't get this. Like, why not just have a time? Like, maybe it takes too many resources. But I think it would have been really cool to have like a timer for 2 duo, a timer for trio, a timer for 4, a timer. Like, I think it'd be cool to have 6 different timers? Because apparently there's a 7-man timer
okay.
and a duo timer.
Okay, that
for the
makes sense
of records.
Then, why they would want
to do that. Right, because like obviously like your 4-man timer versus your 7-man timer wouldn't make any sense because the HPs are so different. But I don't know. I think it'd be cool if they had 6 different timers. Maybe that's too much development though to be worth it. I don't know.
And trying to think of how they would wire that all in is a bit of a exercise too. So I can see that. Tannis, you have anything else on Solak that you'd like to ask?
Mm-hmm.
No? Yeah. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
Solak's fun though. Never forget that I managed to get Tycho a kill way back when. So
wow.
If you ever want to learn, Clan Quest is I know Pop in Clan Quest really wants to get like a clanny team going who will consistently do so. And I think that this change might really help because it's a lot of times it's easier to find 5 clan members than 7. But for people who like want to learn PVM, I think the
both of you should
cool.
totally work on doing that.
Yeah. I think that we're planning on doing that for sure.
Excellent. And you know, I think the last thing out of this stream was one of Mod Shawnee's updates, and you know, he has always been on the side of the clans, and he says it's one of the most underappreciated features in game, and he is, you know, dedicating this time that he has left at the company to work on this. A number of clan QOL changes are going to be coming in, but one of the biggest ones is that you're going to be able to specify a Discord link in your clan settings. So that whenever anybody joins a clan, they'll be given an option to click and say, hey, join our Discord. You click a button and it'll open Discord up and take you directly to the Discord server. Or you'll be able to type /Discord and get right in.
What a hero. He's so great.
Yeah, he's gonna be sorely missed.
Yeah. I think he's everyone's top mod or one of their very favorites.
Yeah. So next week's live stream is definitely going to be something.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's move on to our last piece of RS news this week. Granted, it's been a lot so far, but there is one last thing that we need to talk about because this is very important regarding account security. And what they want to be bringing in is something called an authenticator delay that will effectively prevent those who hijack accounts from turning authenticators right off the bat. Boy, that's a mouthful. So the idea is that there'll be a 72-hour delay in order to create these authenticators with or create the authenticator delay. So they're not going to do that, and instead, what they plan to bring in with, I guess it's going to be next year. Bring in next year. As part of a security suite of updates, is something called backup codes. Now, I don't know if anybody is aware of how backup codes like this work. Google does it, and a number of other big providers that use two-factor authentication do it. The idea behind this, rather than doing an authenticator delay, is that you know an authenticator delay would require you to respond to any alerts during the delay period. Any email alert by design relies on an email that's being sent to a compromised email account, possibly. And if your email alert is deleted, you risk missing the alert should that happen to you, and you won't be able to log in during the delay period. There's also an added complication of the email potentially being sent to your junk or spam folder, and if the hijacker gets into your account and sets their own authenticator delay, it would keep you out of the game for even longer. So the solution to this is backup codes. Google does something like this, and what this means is that whenever you set up your authenticator, you'll get a backup code that you'll write down or print out and keep in a safe place. This will then be used to remove your authenticator if you don't have access to it anymore, and will prevent compromised emails being used to steal accounts. And they say your backup code will only be used on our website to remove authenticator, and it'll need to be kept safe. And the reason they chose this path is that you won't need to intervene to prevent your authenticator from being removed. Hijackers won't have your backup codes. If you lose access to your authenticator, the backup code can be used to restore access. If someone gains access to your email address, your RuneScape account will remain secure because of this. And other companies do indeed use this system already. And one of the big ones, of course, being Google. And, you know, I think one of the things we're all aware of is that one of the times you can lose your authenticator is if your cell phone dies, because the authenticator app on iOS doesn't let you back up all of those codes. And if you do that, you would be locked out. So hence the backup code for this purpose. Now, they say once live, if you lose your authenticator and backup code, it will be possible to request help from player support. But this will be a very strict process and require very clear information, and no request will be actioned for at least 72 hours. And an authenticator removal request to player support will ultimately be a last resort, and you will not be able to rely on the service to manage your authenticator. It will mean that you will lose that. It will mean you aren't able to access your account for a minimum of 72 hours, and the amount of evidence you need to prove your the account owner is very high, and they want to start adding this to Authenticator in 2020. And they want to also use this to make it easier to move your Authenticator when you get a new device or change phones, and continuing password complexity work. So I realized that this was all a mouthful here. So do either of you guys have any questions about what I explained, or could there be this be explained any better?
No, just how do we get our backup codes since we're already signed up?
That's a good question. Once this goes live, I would expect that you will need to remove Authenticator and re-add it to get a backup code.
Oh, okay.
Or they might just have an area in game where or area in the account section of the website where you can click request backup code and it will give you a code.
Well, I hope it's like that.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's a bit weird putting this out before it arrives because this is something that not many players think of. Yet at the same time, this is one of the most bulletproof ways to make your account secure. So I'm just questioning why talk about it now before it's ready to go if we're looking at 2020 for this.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, this is something I've been wanting for a long time at Jagex, because if your email address gets compromised and if you have Authenticator on, they can just log into your account and turn it off. So it is what it is. Oh, I see why they did it. I see why they announced it today. Today they have put it live so that with website login, Authenticator checks, and you'll need to provide your Authenticator for logging into the website. So that's why they announced it today. Is that you will need to use Authenticator if you want to log into the website.
Interesting. It's nice to know that there's a plan in place for making it easier to switch authenticators for different devices when you buy a new phone. Because I was wondering about that, because I might be buying a new phone in the near future, and I was wondering how that worked.
What are you gonna get?
I'm so used to the Apple UI that I'll probably just get the new iPhone.
Yeah. All right.
Just like it's just too. Even if something else is better, I just feel like it's just habit at this point.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And, you know, I just tried to log into the RuneScape website, and it's asking me for my authenticator code. So it is live.
I'm a big fan of that, by the way, because it's I don't know a ton about the way security works, but I always thought it was odd that you could just log in to the website and do all sorts of stuff without.
And if you click that you lost your authenticator, you'll get a link to disable authenticator, and then you get that in the email, and then you just click disable, and it's done. So you see why they need the backup code, because if someone had access to my email right now, they would just completely turn that off.
Right, and I guess there's always two-factor email, but you can never be certain.
You can't guarantee that your player base has that activated. I mean, I do, but I don't know who else does. So,
yeah, I kind of think that if in 2019 your Gmail isn't two-factor authenticated, you're a little bit asking for it. Like, I don't know if that's a controversial opinion, but I think you gotta have it at this point.
Normally, when doing security, I try and go full belt and suspenders.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Let's move on to our tech news. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters this week, because, you know, we do lots of stuff here, and without them, it wouldn't be possible. So this week, I'd like to thank Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Christian S, Darren L, Diana, Jason S, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Sam W, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you, all of you, for your wonderful support of RSBNB Update. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what we're talking about, just head over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and there you can learn about our various options. But for as little as $1 a month, you get, you know, a special mention in our show notes, early access to the notes, the ability to join our roundtable discussions, which we did just this past weekend, that is now live for Patreon supporters. If you weren't able to make it to the recording, you get to vote for topics on the monthly bit, which that vote has completed. This month, we're going to be doing that interview with a professional game developer, so that one should be fun to see. And of course, you help fund the costs of hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord and a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month. And for those that want to give $5 a month, you get a shout out on the podcast every week and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year, which is coming very, very fast. And of course, we're doing our monthly bit. We have something a bit different next month, replacing Inside RSBNB Update, a Patreon exclusive live stream where we have a look at one of the headlining updates of the month. And of course, that'll be 120 Farming and Herblore next month. and of course the RSBNB update roundtable. But should we reach that mythical $99 a month tier, we'll be doing movie night in the RSBNB Discord. We'll watch some of our favorite movies, which will include Star Trek, of course. So you can find out more about this at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right, tech news. Samsung is in the news again for their phones. You know, a couple of years ago was the exploding, I forget what number it was, S8, I think. But
sounds right.
Yeah, this week we have Samsung reportedly fixing an issue with the Galaxy S10 fingerprint sensor. So they released a patch for the S10 and Note S10 that was discovered that could allow anyone's fingerprint to be used to unlock the phone. But here's a catch. You had to have a certain type of screen protector attached to it. I don't know exactly how that would factor in, but you would think doing, you know, fingerprint readers and I guess we could say just biometrics on their phones for a while, Samsung would know how to do this. To my knowledge, Apple hasn't had a similar issue like this before, nor has Google with their Pixel line of phones. But this is definitely something to think about, and it's very good that Samsung has fixed it. The patch should be hitting soon. It's currently only available in South Korea, I guess, because that's where Samsung is based. And the official Samsung support site says on this that unofficial scratched or dirty screen protectors may cause the fingerprint sensor to malfunction. And that's the word they use, malfunction. The Verge points out that there's a big difference between malfunction and allow anyone to get into your phone.
Oh, man.
I love how often the word malfunction is used as a euphemism. Just like from pop culture, Janet at the Super Bowl, to Samsung fingerprint readers. We love the word malfunction.
Samsung previously said that the ultrasonic fingerprint was mistakenly recognizing three-dimensional patterns appearing on certain silicone screen protectors as user fingerprints. As an interim solution, Samsung recommends they remove the screen protectors in question and re-register their prints or use a different authentication method.
This is so strange. I still don't get it, but sure.
That is why I don't have one of those phones.
Yeah, you know, we could say the same thing with Apple and some of the issues that the face scan had last year, but still, this is something that has been around for a long time, and you want to try and get right.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, next one I want to address a bit of potential confusion in the news that might have cropped up, and I don't know if either of you guys have heard of this story, because it did gain mainstream media prominence, and it was going around that Google has reached quantum supremacy with one of its quantum computers. Neither of you guys hear about this in the mainstream tech news?
I did. Okay. And I was confused.
All right. So typically when you have a computer, as we have all the computers that you guys are listening to this show on, they're standard computers that we've been using for decades. And the idea is that you have transistors inside of your CPUs and inside of your memory, and those bits represented by the transistors are in a state of on or off, i.e. a stored charge, that's how they store numbers and memory. And it's either on or off. There is no in-between state. Now, with a quantum computer, you can have something called a qubit, which is effectively a quantum bit. And these qubits can either be on, or they can be off, or they can be on and off at the same time. This is something called superposition, which if you look into quantum mechanics, you'll see is something that's very common in terms of electrons being in numerous states at the same time. And the world of quantum computers and quantum mechanics is downright complicated. So that's as far as I'm going to go in explaining that. A qubit can be both on and off at the same time. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay.
Compared to a standard bit that's just on or off. The qubit can be on and off at the same time. Now,
What?
Yeah, that's what you do.
How? Like, I'm so...
Because you get down to the stage where things are so tiny, you're in the quantum world, where you're harnessing the power of superposition, where electrons can be in the same two different states at the same time.
Huh. Okay. Oh, sure. This is way over my head.
Yeah, and I don't claim to understand it either. But the idea behind this is that you can represent sufficiently more states. So Google says with 333 qubits, there's 2 to the power of 333, or 1.7 times 10 to the 100 computational states, which is a lot when you think about it. 1.7 times 10 to the 100. And in doing that, the quantum computers are able to solve a solution to various problems and look at many different solutions at the same time, allowing them to solve problems that traditional computers would take way longer to solve, if that makes sense. By using that state of
superposition. That part definitely makes sense.
Okay. Now,
so this is going to make them smart enough to take over the world?
No, no, no. That's something that is represented in the movies and won't be happening, as well as, you know, the breaking of encryption, as we've talked about before. That's something that isn't going to happen because there are algorithms in development that are quantum safe, as it's called. Google effectively said this week that they have reached the moment where they have built a quantum computer that can solve a tangible problem. But on the other hand, IBM is saying, not so fast, because maybe if you changed the way you were solving the problem or you changed your hardware setup, you could solve that problem on a traditional computer faster than you were initially thinking that you could, and it would still be feasible. So the example that Google gave, IBM says, yeah, if you change the way you solve this problem, you can solve it in 2.5 days on a standard computer. It would make a lot more sense and would have greater fidelity to it as well. So the reason I wanted to put this in tech news is not because it's a huge breakthrough in quantum computing. It's just because that's what the media is representing it at. But as with all things in science and technology that require research, there are people who disagree, and there's different ways of looking at the same problem that can be solved in a more traditional way for less cost, so to speak. So while Google says it's a breakthrough in terms of that, it's partially true, but at the same time, it's really not as big of a breakthrough as they were making it out to be. And that's why this is tech news, because many people in the standard media thought that this was going to be ushering in a brand new era of computing, but in reality, we're not quite there yet. So that's why this was tech news this week.
But eventually we will be. Is that? Do you think that that's the case, or do you think that
we will
so
be
far
for specific applications?
Okay, so like universities might
have a quantum
one
computer at some point
something.
In time. Yes.
Okay.
The idea of a that quantum CPU replacing your desktop computer—that's not going to happen. Ever, probably.
Ever?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so...
You heard it here first.
Yeah. So this story is,
It's blown up out of proportion.
Okay.
Like, Google did something, but on the other hand, IBM says, hey, there's an entirely different solution you provided here. You could do it in a traditional way and get it done in a reasonable amount of time. So do you really need the quantum computer?
But quantum computing just sounds cool.
Exactly.
Like it sounds like something out of a movie.
And that's why everybody was picking
so,
it up this week.
I get it. Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. And if you're ever wondering how many potential states a qubit can represent, just take however many qubits are in your processor. So a 53-qubit processor stores 2 to the 53 states at one time. And we'll leave with that big number right there.
Okay.
All right. Bringing things slightly back to earth on this. Humble Bundle, does this sound familiar to either of you guys?
Yeah, I get they do free stuff every once in a while. And I always subscribe to the newsletter, so I know that. And get free games.
So they have something called Humble Monthly where, you know, every month you would get a free game. But they're changing it to something called Humble Choice. And the idea behind this is they're going to create a list of 10 games each and every month, and you get to choose the ones that you keep based on the subscription that you have. So they say it's your choice. Choose up to 9 PC games from a curated pool of 10. There won't be any mystery. You'll see all the games up front. No more waiting to see what's going to be released in that package. And it's all the perks you had before, 20% off in the store, the Humble Trove, and 5% donated to charity every month. And with that, the pricing structure is interesting on this one. So for Light, you don't get to keep any games, but that's $4.99 a month. You still get access to the Humble Trove and the store discount. If you want the basic one, you get to keep 3 games a month. This is $14.99 per month or $135 a year. You get to have a choice, and you, of course, get access to the Humble Trove. You also get unlimited access to published originals and beta. And their Premium Plus plan is $20 a month or $180 a year. And you get to keep, as in own, 9 games each and every month. You get the choice, the Humble Trove, and everything else that you would previously get, and a 20% discount in the Humble Store. And this will be arriving later this year. So if you did subscribe to the Humble Bundle in the past, Humble Choice might be something that's a bit more interesting because you actually get a choice now in which games that you actually want. Because I don't know about you guys, but how many people do you know who are subscribed to Humble Bundle and have this huge stack of games that they never play because of it?
Yeah, but
it sounds like me with Steam.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot more choice for it. I don't know what the catalog currently looks like on this one, but I think it's a good way to go. And, you know, I think bringing it back to the core of it each month, 5% of your subscription cost goes directly to charity. So I don't think anybody can argue with that. And yeah. I think the thing I'm interested in is seeing what games they're going to have on the first month to choose from. So
yeah, for sure.
Examples of other games you can buy on the Humble Store: Red Dead Redemption, The Witcher 3, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare.
Ooh, damn.
So if you did subscribe to that, you would get a 20% discount on all of these games.
That's pretty good. There's some good games.
Yeah, and I mean, you're also donating to charity on that too. So I think if you're a gamer and you don't necessarily, you know, have a huge commitment to Steam, this might be something to look into. So, all right, that's it for tech news. Moving on, we do have our skill of the month running. We have our Dungeoneering skill of the month, which concluded just a couple days ago. Raptoid got 3.7 million XP, Jade Gizmo 865K, and Rippeth 149K. And in our thieving skill of the month, which started 18 hours ago or so, we have people who have signed up, but we don't have any results in yet, so we'll be waiting to see what they do in that. We have 4 people signed up in that one. Be interesting to see what kind of insane thieving XP rates we can get in this day and age, eh?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, let's do some achievements of the week. Go for it, Tana. Start us off.
Start us off. Okay. First off, we have Pouncing with 99 Construction on October 22nd. Then we had Lord Gimli with 99 Herb Lore on October 22nd. Then we had Saib Dibu with 99 Fletching on October 21st.
Nicely done, everyone.
So we also have Izant with 99 Thieving on the 21st of October. Harlot Man with 99 Crafting on October 20th, and Terry Dax with 99 Divination also on October 20th.
Good job. Continuing off the list, we have Farrar with 99 Woodcutting on the 20th, and on October 19th, we have Pouncing with 99 Thieving, Guy Lafleur with 99 Hunter, and Lord Gimli again with 99 Ranged. Nicely done, everyone. I really like reading out a couple of your guys' names on the list. I think you guys know which one that is. So, and, you know, I should clarify, that doesn't mean that I don't like reading everyone's names out, but there's one or two names on this list that really stick out to me. Do you guys know what they are in terms of being specific landmarks
or things? I know one. Which I think.
One? Okay.
Zant.
Well, yeah, I mean, Zant is definitely a friend of the podcast, and yeah. Most of these other people are as well. But Lord Gimli, I believe that is potentially named after the place Gimli, Manitoba in Canada. I believe that's where he got
you
his name.
Sure,
from.
That isn't a reference to Lord of the Rings.
Oh, really?
Gimli,
oh.
The dwarf.
Oh, and here I thought we were talking.
You thought you were bonding, huh?
I thought you were just into Lord of the Rings.
No, I thought I was talking about the small town of Gimli, Manitoba.
No, Shane. My money is on Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Me too.
All right.
And you then, gotta get out more.
And then I never watched Lord of the Rings. And then Guy Lafleur.
I don't know that.
Some good books.
Very famous hockey player for the Montreal Canadiens back in the day.
Okay. Well, you might be onto something there.
Yeah, that one makes sense to me.
All right. Gimli, Manitoba is a small rural town on Lake Winnipeg. That would make sense why you guys had never heard of that before. And it's spelled exactly the same way.
More moose than people, huh?
Apparently has a population of 6,200.
Oh, okay.
So more moose than people.
All right. Well, I could make a map of the Canadian wilderness, my pick of the week, but I'm not going to do that. So my actual pick of the week this week is a text editor that I use on macOS called TextMate. And yes, I realize this is a macOS only pick of the week, but it's something that has a good deal of utility to it, not only for programming. And I mean, it's fine if you need to, you know, write a quick little script or something to that effect, but I use other text editors for programming. But there's a good example of this. So a while back, I was doing some data entry, and I had this huge list of numbers, right? And the list of numbers was not sorted. It was completely randomized, or pretty randomized at that. So what TextMate let me do was it let me first sort the list of numbers so that they were ascending from lowest to highest, which is something that I needed to have done. Secondly, it let me remove the duplicates from that list of numbers by just pressing a few buttons, and I didn't need to go through the list of what was somewhere around 700 items, and it just did it with clicking a few buttons here and there. Then finally, its find and replace mechanisms are robust enough that you don't need to resort to the crazy things of regular expressions, which if you know what those are, bless your heart, because you know I still find those hard to work with, but they're very powerful. But its find and replace mechanisms without regular expressions are truly amazing. And it let me turn that standard list of numbers that was one number on each line into a comma-separated list that I was then able to import into a spreadsheet. And I did all of this by pressing a few keystrokes here and there in something that if I was just using something to the effect of Notepad, would have taken me forever to do. So that's why I wanted to talk about TextMate, because, you know, we often talk about editing text, whether it be for Informer articles or writing scripts for code in terms of JavaScript or shell scripts or something to that effect, but we don't talk about where we write. And for me, most of the writing I do is done in basic text editors. And I know there has to be a few of you guys out there who are using the macOS platform. So I wanted to share this. It's called TextMate. It's an open source text editor, and it's completely free. And it's my text editor of choice if I'm just writing a quick script or I need to do text manipulation. So TextMate, you can find it at macromates.com. I bet you guys weren't expecting that for a pick of the week.
But no.
Cool.
I think the closest thing you guys could get on Windows to this is Notepad++.
Okay, I got that.
Okay. No, there you go.
Well, you got to have it to do some mods. Stuff here and there.
Yeah. But yeah, TextMate goes back to, you know, the old days of Mac OS to the point where, you know, back then you used to have to buy TextMate, but, you know, it was 50 euros and this was the old version, but they just made it so the new one was completely free because it's open source and whatnot. So it's a good thing to support. Macromates.com. All right. What have we been up to this week? Let's start with you, David, since you haven't been around for a while.
Well, so I recently started playing more actively again the last couple weeks. The part of that was that I decided to play my Iron Man again. I just unlocked Invention yesterday, and now I'm trying to do a lot of quests. I'm finding it a little bit difficult to get components, but I plan on getting scavenging soon. So that'll
help. Oh,
yeah,
we were supposed to get a Stone Spirit dev blog this week, weren't we? That never came.
Yeah, and then on my main, I obtained the Auburn Lock from the Ceridoman God Wars dungeon boss recently, so I'm done with that, and I'm now AFKing the Corporeal Beast while doing stuff on my Iron Man. And for anyone who didn't know, you can AFK Corp pretty effectively now because the old Ek Coil will zap the Dark Core for you, which is kind of neat.
Nice.
Very cool. Congrats on the bet.
And we talked about AFKing Corp Beast, how that's something, hey?
Yeah, that's did not expect that would be a thing ever. But sure enough, 2019, things are sort of different.
All right. How about you, Tanis?
Man, just about the same old, same old. I collecting charms. A lot of farm runs. I haven't been killed again yet. So, only got one. Got killed last Saturday. Wasn't happy about it, but it was all good. Hasn't happened again. So.
Oh yeah, you were livid when you came into the round table
dude,
after that.
I was mad, dude. I was like, kill a poor farmer out here. What the hell? So, yeah. It's rough out there for a farmer, right, Shane?
Yeah.
Times are hard.
All right. As for me this week, I went back to the hunting area. I, you know, of course, in addition to herb runs and whatnot, I started hunting the Draconic Jadinkos. And, you know, I think I must have pretty good luck. I got my first Draconic Jadinko at kill 148.
Wow.
Holy, yeah. That sounds lucky compared to what I'm hearing like other places.
I've been hearing 1 in 5K.
Yeah, what? That's what the same feedback on our on YouTube.
I think it's 1 in 5K right now. So that's pretty lucky.
I got 2 out of 500 last week on the Igneous.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah, there were people that were telling us like 2K, 3K. It's like, ugh. It's like, well, Shane is lucky, but damn.
Yeah, and I actually just want to point out one of those comments. I think it was Mr. Ling who said that I was wondering about the Hunter Cape perk, and you actually have to put it on your action bar or click activate before doing it. And that just makes so much sense after the fact.
I knew that. I should have caught it. I should have thought about it, and I totally spaced it. So, yeah, props.
Thank you, Mr. Ling.
Props to them. Yes, thanks.
But yeah, I'm trying to get two of the Draconic Jadinkos. I think I got another 300 kills after that 148. So the second one's taking a bit longer to get.
Yeah, and then they said that they would be changing the rates to be much more reasonable.
Yeah, once the on release actually comes on release, out. Yeah. So. But
are you planning on selling those for high prices on release?
Or no,
are
no, you no, no, keep no, them no, for yourself? No, I'm going to keep them for myself and breed them.
Okay.
If that's anything, cool. I hope I got one female and one male, and if not, I'll do some trading on the day of release, and I'll be willing to throw some money towards that if someone doesn't want to just do a straight trade male for female or vice versa.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but no, aside from that, you know, just getting ready for that 120, doing herb runs here and there. It's amazing how all these things have shot up in price, and I think my weekly money-making tip I'd like to shower upon everyone this week on the farming side is the Grenwall spikes, which you can, of course, get from Big Game Hunter, Grenwalls, or from the Divine Box Traps.
Yeah, it makes sense that those would go up a lot.
I also think mudrooms are going to be a good thing to look into as well for the extreme magic potions. So lots of fun little money-making methods cropping up with this. So just keep your eyes open, and there's two of them right there.
Yeah, combination rune-making has always been a ton of money, like 10 mil an hour. Yeah. I bet it's even more now.
And, you know, the best part about mudrooms is you don't even need to run that far. Just use the Shattered Worlds teleport point.
Oh,
that's because really that's where the water altar is.
Yeah, that works out great.
And, you know, with the lunar spells, you don't need the second rune for, or you do need the second rune, but you don't need the second talisman on that with the lunar spell. So you just bring your earth runes and your pure essence, and away you go, you get mud runes.
Nice.
Nice.
All right, I believe that wraps up this week's episode of RSBNB Updates, so thank you to everybody for listening. If you want to join us in-game, you can find us at Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and if you want to subscribe to the show, update.rsbnb.com/subscribe, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, practically anywhere you can listen to podcasts. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe and click there. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.